At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This is the Dynasty Roundtable Podcast. Thank you for clicking on the video. Thank you for downloading the podcast, whatever, however you're listening. Thank you for listening, watching. Tonight, today, whatever time period we're in, you know, part of the day, not time period. It's not like we time traveled to do this. Although, I in the comments on YouTube, a guy got mad at me for joking about science fiction. He said there was a little bit too much science fiction for him, but he liked the show. But anyway, so I'm not trying to do any science fiction here. I'm just trying to make fun of myself and the word choice that I chose.
In that, was that on the last episode, or was that?
I think it might have been a few episodes ago, but okay. At the end I said something stupid probably. But anyway, tonight, today, this morning, who knows where we are? We are talking about 13 secrets that Vegas is telling us out in the open. You could go see these Vegas lines for these players, the season-long props that we'll be discussing tonight and what they mean specifically for Dynasty Fantasy Football, and if we agree with them or we don't agree with them, and the actions that you should take on these players based on these lines. So Matt Babich, we have 13 players. How, like, as you're approaching this episode, What are your thoughts? What are your feelings? How you doing? Tell us everything.
Definitely a lot of players where Vegas isn't necessarily on my side. So admittedly, I popped this open and I was like, huh, there's quite a few of my priors that these lines conflict with. And so it was an interesting thought process to kind of sit down and, you know, I'm a betting man, but I've never been good at futures, and statistically, generally, most bettors aren't, because they're the most difficult to control for, particularly with injuries and roster changes and things like that. But it really made me sit down and think, you know, it's August. We're a little late in the draft season for some. You know, sickos like me are already pretty wrapped up with a lot of my drafts. So a lot of mine was post-mortem thinking. But a lot of drafts to be done here. This is, August is the hottest month for drafts. We're here in the beginning of August. So definitely a good time to start thinking about some of these pivotal players at some pretty interesting ADP points, and Dynasty as well, because we have certain guys who, you know, maybe at points in their career, technically there's a receiver we'll talk about who's age-wise in the prime of his career, but relatively forgotten about in the Dynasty landscape and the redraft landscape. So we'll talk about him and what his output's like. And there are other players like that, pivotal points in both their redraft ADP and their Dynasty values right now. And it's a very interesting conversation we're about to have.
So let's get right into it. Let's not waste any time. And let's start off with the most polarizing rookies that Vegas has covered. And let's start with Teteroa McMillan, shall we? A lot of people's wide receiver one. And this season with the Carolina Panthers, his over-under, according to FanDuel, so don't get mad at me, get mad at them, 825.5 is the line, receiving yards, over-under. With 4.5 touchdowns, this one surprised me, because when you look at Carolina's depth chart at wide receiver, it is very uninspiring. It is Adam Thielen, it is Xavier Leggett, and they don't have much at tight end either. You know, I mean, I suppose Jalen Coker, we all like Jalen Coker around these streets. We're all coke heads around here. But this line feels low, especially with touchdowns, especially with a guy that's as big and as a downfield threat as Tetteroa McMillan projects to be. This seems a little bit light to me, to be honest with you, in terms of touchdowns. Now, I don't know about the yards. The yards, I feel like, could go either way. 825.5, maybe a little bit low. But this one kind of shocked me a little bit, to be honest with you, because I think the Panthers, Bryce Young was playing a lot better towards the end of last season. And now they have more weapons, better weapons. This line almost suggests that maybe Vegas thinks Tetteroa McMillan isn't that good. That's kind of what it suggests to me. Now, full transparency, I don't religiously study these things. So if there's somebody who knows like 10 years of rookie lines, if this is basically in line with what a top 10 wide receiver, what their season long prop is going to be, I don't know. But just on the surface value, when I'm doing my projections for redraft, this feels a little bit light. What do you think?
Yeah, I you hit my thoughts exactly, particularly with the touchdowns. That's the one that sticks out to me. I had a slightly different takeaway where I thought this has a little bit more to do with an indictment on the Panthers offense. And the fantasy community as a whole was already kind of bought into Dave Canales as an offensive coordinator. And then we were bought into what we saw in the second half of that last season with Bryce Young, with the Carolina Panthers, and not really having a lot of people to throw to. Insert a guy like Tetteroa McMillan who can play that outside role, that alpha X. You know, I'm not comparing him to Mike Evans, but the Mike Evans role in a Canales offense, those are very real comparisons that we can make. And I think there's a combination here of an indictment on the Panthers offense and a projection of what McMillan's share of the offense is going to be. Now, I don't know why they have that take, right? It could be Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, kind of connection struggles. Like, I don't really think we're out on Marvin Harrison Jr. as a talent, but it's a very good comparison, in my opinion, because Marvin Harrison Jr., I can't remember what his line was. I didn't think to look it up, honestly, but I'm willing to bet, as I see you typing, that this, it was probably over 825.5. We had very high expectations for him. He didn't quite meet it. But what happened was 885 receiving yards, 8 touchdowns, 3 over his line, and wide receiver 39 in fantasy points per game, 27th in expected fantasy points per game on a team that finished 12th in points per game. So I think that's most to do with this. I don't think they think they're going to be a top 15 offense in points per game. I think they'll be pretty close. And then they're probably projecting closer to, you know, a 21-22% target share with a 17-ish% red zone share for McMillan. And that's where I disagree with this line here. I think it's going to be closer to Mike Evans' usage of that, you know, 24-25% target share, that, you know, 27, maybe even 30% red zone share with McMillan's abilities. That's where I agree with you, where I'd be more inclined to hit this over if I'm betting on it on the touchdowns. I think 825.5 is a pretty good line for a rookie receiver. 885 yards that Harrison had was actually a pretty good season from a yards perspective as a rookie. It just didn't meet his expectations. So I think it's a pretty fair line from the yards perspective. I don't have really any takeaways from a dynasty perspective. I don't think this is telling us to sell. I don't think I'm buying just based off of this. So I'm not really changing my opinion on Tet McMillan. I just think the touchdown line's a little low.
Yeah. One last thing I'll say is for dynasty, if he comes in around this for dynasty purposes, like let's say maybe he's a little bit short, like 800 receiving yards, 5 touchdowns or something like that, I don't think it's going to kill his dynasty value. It might go down a little bit, maybe. But he's still a young wide receiver that was taken in the top 10. Just look at Rome Odunze's value, I think, is maybe what might happen if, you know, Tetteroa McMillan does perform around this Vegas line. But I have my redraft projections pulled up, and I know this is a dynasty podcast, but I have him projected for about a 25% target share, 1,020 receiving yards, and 7 touchdowns. So maybe I should go hit this over. I don't know. But let me know what you think of those projections. So I am wide receiver 21 in redraft. So anyway, let me know what
Vegas
you think in the
definitely
comments.
Staying to fade at redraft ADP based off of this.
Definitely.
I'm not fading based off of this Vegas line because he could still go under this line if they have a slow start to the rookie season or there's any injuries that happen. But I think with a touch, you know, some touchdown luck and then a rookie bump, you know, towards the back half of the season, that's what's going to maintain his value. Not necessarily where he finishes in these stats, but do we see that upside throughout the season? I mean, if he does struggle, do we see a palpable increase as that year goes on and he gains that experience?
All right, let's move on to maybe one that's going to make Matt Babich mad, and that's Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter, over under 750 receiving yards, over under 4.5 touchdowns. And honestly, I was a little, I mean, I get it. There's the uncertainty of how much defense is he going to play. And so far through training camp, he's been playing a fair amount of defense. I understand that, but it's not like the Jaguars really have anyone else. I mean, I know they signed Dyami Brown, but it's Brian Thomas Jr. and Travis Hunter that project to be their top two wide receivers. And even if he gets part-time usage in the offense, like a 60-70% snap share, I still think he would have a chance to hit this. And I think that's the worst possible scenario, maybe 50%. I would have a hard time believing that they would use him just 50% of the snaps on offense. But let me know what you think of this line, because I know that you're probably an even bigger fan of Travis Hunter than I am, if that's possible. But we're huge fans of the talent. Man, I think that this is really light, in terms. And Vegas is telling you they don't know, I think. I think that this is a very uncertain line that accounts for the defense part. They don't know how much offense he's going to play. And I would say I think he's going to play more offense than a lot of us think. So what are your thoughts on this line? What do you think Vegas is trying to tell us here?
I'm honestly shocked that they have a line for him. I think that's where my head's at, mostly because I agree. This shouts uncertainty. Because if we had a very clear picture of where that's going to be on the spectrum, if we knew he was going to play a lot of offense, this line would obviously be higher. If we knew he was going to play a lot of defense, it would obviously be lower. They kind of put it in the middle, and I don't think year one's going to be this short, like 50-50 split. He is dominating fools in practice, really on both sides of the ball, but we've talked about it so many times. If he's that effective on offense, he's going to be playing a lot of offense. And when we have these archetype comparisons, like when we have similar guys like a Brian Thomas Jr. with a Travis Hunter, we can start saying like, okay, well, maybe we look at what Godwin was able to do under Liam Cohen in the slot and take a look at it through that perspective. So Godwin generated 576 yards in 7 games in his role in Cohen's offense. That's about a little over 82 yards per game. Now, Seth, I took 65% of that. 65% of Godwin's prime production in the slot, which I feel like is pretty fair. If anything, it's a little bit low. And then took that over just a 14-game span, and that's 748.8 yards. So essentially right on the dot at the 750 over-under. And so that feels really low to me, because I think he's much better than that. And I think we can start creating different calculations of different, you know, usage patterns and efficiencies and find multiple ways to get us to 750 with different scenarios of Travis Hunter. Now, I think the TD line makes a little bit more sense, as the uncertainty is especially baked in here. Variance is a huge part of touchdowns, as is roles in the red zone, etc. So 4.5 is a little bit harder to hit on. You know, we got guys like George Pickens who are every down rolls, granted in bad offenses historically, but even they have a hard time getting to this line because of a lot of factors. So neither of these are ones I'm necessarily willing to gamble on. Just because, you know, futures are very finicky. I'd rather bet on his role on a week to week basis as we know information, because historically props are, or books are also slow to adjust prop lines week over week. So I'd rather take Hunter on a week by week basis from a gambling perspective. And again, I think it just says uncertainty. And once again, not willing to change my stance in redraft or dynasty based on what Vegas is telling us here.
Yeah, this is a polarizing one, but I can almost promise you I feel like there are a lot of dynasty gamers just are waiting to see what happens with Travis Hunter, and a lot of them just don't want to take the risk. I think that was reflected in rookie drafts. A lot of rookie drafts that I was in, Travis Hunter was falling to the mid first round, and I was scooping him up every single time he got to 105, 106, and he fell there a few times. Now, he was getting taken at 102, 103 as well, but Travis Hunter, to me, I think that's it. People are just waiting to see, okay, is he going to play a 90% snap share on offense, or is it going to be 50%, or is it going to be somewhere in between? Because if he's on the field for most of the offensive snaps, like by most, I mean like 80, 90%, I think his value has a chance to go just absolutely through the roof, because I think he's a dynamic talent at wide receiver. And you can go check out my film analysis of him on my YouTube channel. I thought he was a better wide receiver than a corner. I think he's excellent at both. It's just going to be dependent on what the Jaguars want to do with him. And considering Liam Cohen is their head coach now, and he's an offensive guy, I think that adds to the probability that they're going to use him more offensively than some people might think. But again, from a dynasty perspective, I think the lesson that we need to take away is sometimes you can really benefit from the uncertainty of a situation. Now, it's a risk. It could blow up in your face for sure. And maybe you don't want to take that risk with Travis Hunter, but man, I still feel like the buy signs are flashing for me. I'm willing to take the risk, but again, I have a ton of Travis Hunter because I got him in rookie drafts, but I'd still be on the buy side, even with the Vegas telling us this. And you can let us know what you think of that in the chat. But
last thing real quick I have on Travis Hunter, I'm going to throw you a rookie stats and see if you can name that rookie. He had a 17.6% target share, which was 49th, 56.8% snap share, which was 82nd, 69.6% route participation, which was 78th, but a 24.4% target rate, which was 26th. He finished with 793 yards and 8 touchdowns in 2023.
Oh, that was in 2023.
2023. Very recent. Kind of a gadgety player even.
Yeah. Huh.
Jaden Reed.
Jaden Reed.
Jaden Reed was able to demolish this line pretty much. And with horrible usage and snap share and participation metrics, but good usage metrics on a per route run basis. That's why I'm saying multiple scenarios for us to get us there, because that's like the bare case on Travis Hunter, is that he has this really poor and really low participation rate, but the talent is there for him to have that exceptional usage rate on a per route run basis when he's out there. And we could still clear this line, even if the defensive minded people, their world comes true.
And I know some people think BTJ being there is bad for him. I think that's actually good for him, because he's not going to line up against the top corner ever if BTJ is on the field. So anyway, Vegas is probably telling us not to invest in Travis Hunter, but I'm willing to buck Vegas here, because I think that there's a lot of uncertainty there. Let's go to an interesting player that I have told people to sell on this show before, and that's Jerry Jeudy. I was honestly a little bit surprised by this prop. 900.5 receiving yards over under, and then the over under is 3.5 touchdowns. That touchdown number is just an average, basically, of his last two seasons. I mean, he's had two touchdowns two seasons ago, four touchdowns last year. So it's sitting right at the middle. The difference, though, he's very, very much the clear number one receiving option, unless you count David Njoku in this offense. Joe Flacco projects to be the starting quarterback. Now, I don't think that they've committed to a quarterback. I mean, it could be him. It could be Kenny Pickett. I suppose it could be Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders. Those guys would seemingly be long shots, but this is also a fluid quarterback situation in the sense that it's probably going to change. This team's probably not going to be very good, and they're going to be throwing the ball a lot. And I think Vegas is telling you, Jerry Jeudy's going to be a high volume wide receiver, most likely, but the touchdowns are just not going to be there for him once again, because this offense is probably going to run a lot of plays. Stefanski likes to run a lot of plays. They're going to be behind a lot, but it's not going to be an offense that's going to be efficient whatsoever. So thoughts on this line, Jerry Jeudy, what do you think?
I mean, Vegas is screaming at us to buy, really. He finished the season last year with 1,230 yards and four touchdowns, wide receiver 21. From weeks 8 through 18 was the wide receiver 8 in fantasy points per game. An absolutely stellar run after Amari Cooper was traded and he really kind of took over in this offense. Even, you know, without the 40-point explosion where he put up over 200 yards, he was still a stellar performer. And this was the interesting player I was talking about earlier, because he's 26 years old. So he's in the prime, you know, in that age apex area. He's got two seasons left, essentially, in this age apex. And 900 yards feels a little low here. 972 in 2022 in 15 games. We have Joe Flacco, who, in my opinion, is a very lateral move here in quarterback from Jameis Winston. We've seen Flacco, even in this offense, propel the top target to fantasy success. The biggest question is what happens, as you said, in this fluid quarterback situation when the Browns are ultimately bad. Who do they go to? Is it Pickett? Is it Gabriel? Is it Sanders? Are any of them going to be better than, you know, a DTR towards the end of last year? And that's where even then we saw some better performances, but you know, we even had a 2-for-20 dud, you know, in the middle there in week 16 in one of the most important games. There is just not a lot of confidence in what happens after that. And there's where we get these lines. I think if we had like a Flacco-Winston 1-2 combo here in Cleveland and we knew it would be one of those two for pretty much the whole season, we'd be a lot more confident in this line. I'm willing to buy for that early season spike. I'm willing to get some overreactions to an early season bump before things get rocky for the Browns in terms of the quarterback situation. But you have to understand you're playing a pretty risky game because Jeudy doesn't carry a lot of cachet in terms of name brand value. So if that doesn't pan out, or if people kind of see through your game and say, hey, you know, the Browns are going to switch quarterbacks here, I'm not willing to buy, you know, Jeudy for a long term or even for a championship run, you're running a risky game. So I'm leaning more towards the buy side because I do see where that short-term bullishness is coming from, but understand it carries a lot of risk.
Yeah, I think that Jeudy is one of these players that you don't feel that great if he's on your team. But, and I don't think, and you let us know what you think. As always, I want the audience to let us know. Jerry Jeudy is player 100, according to Keep Trade Cut. He's ranked behind Mike Evans and Jaden Higgins, and I would rush to whatever window I would have to rush to get Jerry Jeudy off my team if I could trade him straight up for Mike Evans or Jaden Higgins. I just would. I don't really believe in this offense that much. I do think it could get really ugly, especially towards the end of the season, because I think that they're not going to be very good and they're going to probably play one of those rookies. I mean, why wouldn't they? But again, I think it's a situation where Vegas is telling us that they don't really believe in any of the other pass catching options outside of maybe David Njoku. I mean, Deontay Johnson's interesting in Dynasty. I don't know how you feel about him, but he's with the Browns now. And they're going to be playing in some of these slop games, man, where they're going to be playing from behind. You hope that they don't, if you have Browns, you hope that they don't get too far behind where they start benching guys. It's that happy medium. But man, I guess just because that there aren't I mean, there's no other options in the offense. I don't know how I feel about this receiving line. I guess I would lean under, but he has cleared 900 and a half in two of the last three seasons. So I don't know. I'm iffy about that. I probably wouldn't bet it by any stretch of the imagination. Any final thoughts on this one before we move on to our next player?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go to our next player. That's going to be Jameson Williams. And the reason I found this one interesting is because Vegas is actually, I think, pretty high on Jameson Williams. 875.5 is the line for receiving yards and 5.5 touchdowns for Jameson Williams. This is a Lions offense that we know is really, really dynamic, and they play inside of a dome. Last season, Williams had just over 1,000 receiving yards and 7 touchdowns. So it is lower than that. I think Vegas, at least in my opinion, is telling us perhaps this Detroit offense is going to take a step back without Ben Johnson, which has been a narrative throughout all of the offseason. And they've lost not just Ben Johnson, but they've lost a lot of their other offensive coaches as well. And it's not like, you know, Dan Campbell is, you know, an offensive guru of a play caller like Kyle Shanahan type. So what are your thoughts here? Because my initial thoughts were, man, you know, Jameson Williams isn't that far off from some of the other names that I would consider elite options at the wide receiver position, or at least wide receivers that I think are better. You know, he has around the same line as maybe a George Pickens. I'm trying to think. Rome Odunze is at 850.5. Stephon Diggs at 775.5. And I think he's the lead option there. So I don't really love this line. I think I'd probably be looking under, but I think Vegas is telling us that, you know, they believe in Jameis Williams at least a little bit. So what do you think?
It's interesting because I have almost the same takeaway, except for the how we're interpreting what Vegas thinks here. I actually think Vegas is lower on Jameson Williams. So we're talking about a roughly 13% reduction in production for somebody who was the wide receiver 23 last year, now with an ADP of wide receiver 25. His dynasty value is somewhere close to that. I don't have it pulled up immediately, but wide receiver 29. So a little bit lower than 25 there, a little bit lower than what in terms of dynasty, like maybe, yes, a little bit higher on Jameson Williams. But I think dynasty has some different things baked in where we have that introduction of new receivers and we know what Jameson Williams is. He's made that very clear. I think this line's pretty fair for somebody of his skill set, a little bit maybe on the higher side, but again, like he just went for 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. He does have that game-breaking ability. He is the second best wide receiver there, whether you want to argue, you know, where he should fit in the ranks of, you know, Laporta and Gibbs beyond Amon-Ra St. Brown is up for debate, but highly electric playmaker, tons of big playability. Given especially where Marvin Harrison Jr. finished, which was over this line in both of those events, still pretty low in fantasy points per game. So they're projecting a downward season for Jameson Williams. They're not projecting him to take this step forward like a lot of the bullish people on JMO do or think is going to happen again this year. So I think they're actually low on Jameson Williams, but for all the same reasons that you were echoing.
Yeah, let's move on to our next player, because this one, I think, out of all the lines that I was looking at, and I put this one here for a reason, was Garrett Wilson. And I might have messed this graphic up on the screen, so I apologize. But the real graphic should be 950.5 receiving yards, 4.5 touchdowns. That is really low. That is really, really low, especially considering Garrett Wilson he's never had less than 1,000 receiving yards in a season. And I get it. The touchdowns, whatever. I mean, 4.5 touchdowns is, I suppose, but supposedly, Matt, I keep being told that Garrett Wilson has the best quarterback he's ever played with in Justin Fields. That's what I keep hearing. But Vegas is telling us, no, no, no. We don't necessarily believe that. And again, I apologize. It should say 950 and a half on the screen, 4.5 touchdowns. I messed up the graphic, but what are your thoughts on this one? Because I thought it was, you know, very interesting how low they are on Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, it seems like they're predicting a, in terms of the Jets, a historic run rate for the New York Jets. Just going to be pounding the rock with Braylon Allen, with Breece Hall, with Justin Fields now with his legs. To project him for a, you know, career low receiving yards, that's what you have to expect. Because the receiving core didn't change. Through thick and thin, he's been one of the biggest target earners in that offense. Still going over this line in an offense where Aaron Rodgers nearly preferred, if not explicitly preferred, Davante Adams. And I'm a little bit more bullish on this line. Kinda. I've always been pretty bearish on Garrett Wilson. I think Vegas is corroborating my story there as a sell at wide receiver 13, because look, if you're not going to be hitting 1,000 yards, or if you're barely going to be hitting 1,000 yards and pushing for 5 touchdowns again, you're not going to be, you know, that top 15 receiver again, seeing that in his historic production. And how many more years can he get away with this? He's going to be 26 at this time next year. And granted, I think there's been nobody in the history of wide receivers that deserve more, you know, excuses or deserve more slack than Garrett Wilson. But from a fantasy perspective, that doesn't matter. What matters is who's in front of him or who's around him. And I'm with Vegas on this line. I think that's a pretty proper place to set it. From their perspective, they want to entice action. So I think putting it at a little over 1,000 is going to scare the market away. So I understand why Vegas is a little bit low in that perspective. And I'm with them. I've been on the seller side of Garrett Wilson for a while because of all this situation issues, and it's not going to get any better this year.
I remember talking with a friend of mine about betting, and we had this thing we always came back to. If a line doesn't make sense, there's probably a good reason for it. And this line makes no sense. When you look at what Garrett Wilson has done historically, I mean, he's always been a wide receiver that's been targeted at a high level. Career low in targets was in his rookie season with 147. And I can't imagine. I mean, the target volume, let me say that again. The passing volume in the offense is probably going to come down, but the target share for Garrett Wilson, especially with a quarterback like Justin Fields, is going to be high. And maybe he gets on the low end of 130, 140 targets, but that's probably what he's going to get. But Vegas is telling you, no, that we don't believe in just like Justin Fields can generate this. I mean, because this offense would have to go through guys like Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson, and because there's nobody else that they have that really inspires you, at least in the wide receiver room. So it would have to be Garrett Wilson getting a lot of volume like he always has. And he, like we said, he's never finished below 1,000 receiving yards. So I think the big takeaway with this is, and I've always been pro Garrett Wilson, Vegas is telling you to sell. That's what they're telling you to do. So anyway, let's move on to another player who's getting up there in terms of dynasty. But the reason I found this interesting, and we're talking about Travis Kelce, line of 725 and a half, 4.5 touchdowns. So the reports here, and I'm, you know, Kansas City Chiefs are in my backyard. The reports, everything out of camp is Kelce is in much better shape than he was last year. And he wants, this could be his final year. So he doesn't want to go out with on a poor season. And this line, Matt, is telling you that Travis Kelce is about to have the worst season he's ever had in his career. Because not only is this line significantly lower than any other season in his career, but it's lower by almost 100 yards. Like last season was his worst statistical season of his career, 823 receiving yards, 3 touchdowns, 12, but still 12.2 fantasy points per game. Man, it all depends on how you feel on Travis Kelce, but Vegas is telling you, you need to get what you can. You need to get out. You need to sell. I am tempted to buy. I'm tempted to maybe not bet this line, but for my win now teams, I think Kelce's motivated this year, and I think that he's going to have a pretty nice season. But what do you think?
Yeah, so this is obviously an indication to sell. I think from a dynasty perspective, I'm still not super in. His name has so much cachet, and when we look at the current ADP here from Dynasty Data Lab, you know, tight end 15 is actually pretty affordable. I was actually thinking he was still inside the top 10. So at an 11th round price, tight end 15, you know, you're talking Jonnu Smith right now is tight end 14. So yeah. Relatively cheap. I actually have completely changed my stance there. I'm a little bit buy as well on the dynasty side. Because I think what they're kind of projecting is another age-related decline. Plus, we have Marquise Brown now, who's healthy, expected to play a lot of games. We have Worthy in year two, and we have Rice for likely over half of the season. I think that target competition actually frees up Kelce to be more effective. Yeah, 35-year-old Travis Kelce is not going to be putting up career numbers when he's the only receiver worth a damn for 75% of the season. Are we really shocked that teams were able to figure out how to slow down this offense and limit Kelce? Now, when Brown, Worthy, and Rice are all on the field, Worthy with more experience, Rice in his role, and Brown, you know, playing a little bit more comfortably after recovering from that injury and spending some more time in the system, I think that frees him up to get closer back to his 2023, you know, 10.6 yards per reception as opposed to his 8.5 in 2024. So you can predict a pretty massive fall off in receptions and still get way over this line and close to where he was last year in terms of overall tight end production. And I'm having trouble scrolling over here, but yeah, tight end 6 in fantasy points per game, even at only 823 yards and 3 receiving touchdowns. The touchdowns I wouldn't want to touch from a gambling perspective. I'm willing to take the over here on his receiving yards. I think him and Hunter with like some ambiguous situations here, one with age and role and one with, you know, Travis Hunter and not knowing what the utilization is going to be. I don't like parlays a whole lot, but I would rather, you know, instead of betting on each of those, I would combine this into maybe a parlay and throw half on it, you know, knowing that you can get a pretty bullish outcome for either of these pretty easily. But I agree with you that I think he's motivated and this is a little bit low.
Yeah. And the price is not cheap. Anywhere. Yeah, I mean, cheap. He's cheap. So it's a no-brainer move for a win now team. Let's talk about another guy who's potentially a win now asset, and that's Tyreek Hill. And I should have mentioned these lines are courtesy of FanDuel. I think I said that at the top, but just in case I didn't, get mad at them, not at me, for these lines. And this is not gambling advice. We are completely coming at this from a dynasty perspective, trying to get some insight into what Vegas is telling us. But Tyreek Hill is our next player. 975.5 is the line for him. 7.5 touchdowns. And honestly, that really surprised me, the 7.5 touchdowns. He is currently going, let's see if I can find this, as the wide receiver 12 off the board in underdog drafts, 21st overall. So he's a back end second round pick in those formats. And I got to be honest with you, I was a little bit surprised by this because he had such a down year last year, but he still put up 959 receiving yards, 6 touchdowns. So this line is just a smidge over that. It's basically saying, okay, he's going to repeat that performance from last year. It's basically Vegas telling you he's not an elite wide receiver anymore. And I'm honestly caught in the middle here. I'm unsure of what to do. I think if I have Tyreek Hill, I'm putting him on the trade block and seeing what I can get for him potentially. But if I'm a win now team, I think I'm just going to ride it out because I don't think I can get that much. Obviously, if you're a rebuilding team, I think you're selling him. But I think Vegas is also telling you the party is just about over with Tyreek Hill, even though that touchdown line is maybe a little bit high for my taste. There's a chance Tyreek Hill could burn you this year if you don't draft him or if you trade him away. But based on what we saw last season, I think the odds of that happening are less than 50%, let's say. I think it's less than a coin flip that he gets back to the old Tyreek Hill that we are used to seeing. But what do you think, Matt? Do you agree with that or do you not agree with that? What do you think?
Yeah, this line surprised me as well. It seems like, oh, okay, he had like 950 yards last year. Tua was hurt for a lot of it. So we'll bump it up and you know, 975 and 7.5 touchdowns. But I think there's a lot more career regression that goes into this or should be going into this than it is. Because when we look at when Tua came back over, you know, weeks 8 through the rest of the season, or nearly the rest of the season, when did Tua stop playing? I missed that. 16. He had only one game over 100 yards, and he had four games under 50 yards. A 16-point stinker, a 16-yard stinker, 48-yard stinker, 36-yard stinker, 29-yard stinker. He did have a 28-point game against the Jets in week 14, but there was a lot of volatility, a lot of downsides, but he ran hot with touchdowns, scoring 5 over that stretch, and I think that's what's masked all of this. I hate disagreeing with Vegas so much because I'm usually so bad at this, you know, projecting these season-long totals, but I think this line's a little bit high. I do think he can regress in his career but still hit this mark if the offense of the Dolphins is just really firing, like really high powered this year. But Vegas is telling you to buy, and I lean more sell, but I feel like over this offseason, up until this point already, I had been capitulating a little bit from a win now perspective, whether or not Tyreek Hill makes sense. But I can't do it simply because of what we're hearing in the offseason. And that just, it seems like Tyreek Hill's pretty checked out and that the chemistry is much greater between Tua and other players in that offense.
Yeah. Just to give you an idea, like his receiving prop is only 50 yards lower than Ladd McConkey's. It is 50 yards better than Jalen Waddle, who's on the same, they're on the same team, obviously. It's pretty significantly worse than or lower than Drake London's, basically right in line with Davante Adams. Davante Adams 950.5, and so I think that Vegas is telling you that another season, and it's funny that we consider a 959 yard 6 touchdown season from Tyreek Hill a disappointment, but that's kind of what Vegas is telling you. That's kind of what they project for him. Maybe a touchdown more, 2 touchdowns more, maybe. But again, I think that they're telling you he's closer to wide receiver 20 than he is, you know, a top 6 or 8 option at the position. So let's move on to some running backs. I didn't really mean to split this up, wide receiver, running back. But let's talk about Saquon Barkley, because the narrative on Saquon Barkley is, oh, he can't repeat as the RB1. I've even said that on this show, that there hasn't been a back-to-back RB1 over the last 5 years, and maybe even going back even further than that, if you look at the past RB1s. And Vegas is telling you they don't care, because the over-under rushing yard prop is 1,400.5. And the running back that we're going to talk about next, the consensus potential RB2, depending on how your drafts shake out, is a full 200 yards less than Saquon Barkley on the rushing prop, which I find insane. But anyway, over under 10.5 touchdowns, that's just rushing touchdowns. It could be different. Total touchdowns, there could be a number out there, but I could only find the rushing touchdowns on FanDuel. Vegas is telling you Saquon Barkley is about to have a repeat of the RB1 season that he had last year. And I don't know if I buy it, to be honest with you. We'll see. I don't think that offensive situation has anything to do with it. I think the offense is going to be great again this year. The offensive line is going to be good. The only issue I have is the history of the position. It feels so risky to count on Saquon Barkley to do exactly what he did with the kind of usage he had last year. So, but Vegas is telling me I'm dead wrong. So, and Saquon Barkley could definitely burn me. And Vegas is telling you, you should buy in Dynasty, not sell, at least in my opinion. But what do you think, Matt? What are we supposed to take away from this line here?
Exactly what you just said. Vegas is telling any of your sell concerns to go shove it, because they're buying at his dynasty value. They're buying at his redraft value. And look, I get it. It's, you know how much it is to take a 600 rushing yard decrease and project that? Like, you look on the surface and you're like, man, 1400 and a half. That is steep. But then you break it down and you're like, oh, he'd have to have a pretty bad year compared to what he did last year to only hit 1400 yards. And so what does that tell us about the offense? Okay, either another running back is getting heavily involved, or this offense takes a step back, or this offense shifts to be much more pass heavy. I don't think we're going to see a huge shift into the, you know, passing over expected. I think that's been kind of settled what their identity is on offense. I don't think there's another back in this backfield that can do what Barkley does. So it also then just comes down to health. Like, do I think he plays enough games to hit this? And I think he does. I really think that this is a pretty fair line where I would be buying, as a win now team, I'd be buying Saquon Barkley at RB4. We've seen what his ceiling is, and there are three running backs on this earth that I think are generational talents and can defy age, can defy the history of the position, and Saquon Barkley's one of them, Derrick Henry's another, and Christian McCaffrey's a third. And now I know the Christian McCaffrey one, you lose that argument right there, because he did exactly that. He was the RB1 in 2023 with a crap ton of touches, and then had that Achilles tendonitis that next season. But it's not like that was some like fluke injury. That was something that occurred. It lasted all off season, and it took a while to get rid of. They're just people that defy odds. And I'm okay with buying Barkley in the short term as a win now team, because I think he's going to be that elite next year. And Derrick Henry just did it in, you know, his age 30 season. So with Saquon, who has a lot less tread on the tire, but more injury history, you know, why can't he be that same case? Why can't 29-year-old Christian McCaffrey, you know, this year, be that same thing where they just go right back to dominating? I think Saquon in this offense, if he's healthy, he's clearing this number, no problem.
I think as you were talking, something clicked in my brain, and I'm going to capitulate and say, while it's unlikely for him to repeat as RB1 in fantasy football, and Bijan, I think it's crazy to me that Bijan's overtaken him in the underdog streets. I mean, those are where the sharpest drafters are, you know, drafting in June and July, the real sickos. They're taking Bijan over Saquon more times than not. If there's a running back that can do it, his name is Saquon Barkley. So I don't think I want to stand in the way of Vegas here. And I think this is the moment where I completely reverse course on Saquon Barkley, even though I just presented the antithesis to the argument that you laid out. I think you've convinced me to go the other way, because there are a few running backs that have ever looked like Saquon Barkley, and there are a few running backs that can do what he can do on a football field. So if anybody can do it, it's him. And I'm here to tell you that I believe in Saquon Barkley now. I'm going to completely reverse course, because I think you're right. I think you've just talked me into it. So apologize for flip-flopping there, but sometimes you have to think. This is why we have these conversations, so we can think this through and talk it through. And my argument was completely based on the history of the RB1 finishers. And I don't think any of those guys, even Christian McCaffrey, and I know this might be slanderous to some people, but just a true, what we think of as a bell cow running back, I mean, Saquon Barkley is pretty damn good. Let's move on to another running back that's pretty good, and that's Bijan Robinson. And this is the other running back that I was talking about earlier. His rushing prop is lower, significantly lower than Saquon Barkley's at 1,200.5 rushing yards for the season, 10.5 touchdowns. The touchdowns are the same. I think this, obviously, Vegas is telling you that this is a running back that they believe in. I believe he has the second highest rushing yard total out of all the running backs. And then after that, I think it's a, you know, a significant drop off to who's next. I think it's probably McCaffrey. But Bijan, man, running behind that Falcons offensive line in that system with a probably an improved quarterback situation. I know we got a small sample size from Michael Penix, but he just feels like a workhorse running back that I'm targeting just about everywhere. If you can get him, but the problem is he's probably going to be really hard to acquire. It's probably a lot easier to acquire Saquon Barkley in Dynasty, which Vegas is telling you to buy Saquon Barkley, by the way. So what do you feel like this, these odds are telling you? One of the reasons I put this here was just to compare it to Barkley, to tell you how much Vegas is telling you that Saquon's a buy in Dynasty. But what are your thoughts on Bijan?
Yeah, I agree. It's funny because they are trying to tell you to buy, but it also kind of seems like a bonkers line because he had nearly 1,500 rushing yards last year. And granted, Player Profiler shows total yards, so I didn't get to look up what his rushing yards were. He only had 2 receptions in that game, so 173 total yards in that Week 18 game against Carolina. Willing to wager it was over 100 yards rushing. I'm pretty confident it was from recollection. But we have one sample size with Bijan Robinson, and he absolutely killed it. And I think that's what's to come this year. He was first among all running backs in weighted opportunities. He was 5th in target share at, you know, a little over 13%, and had over 20 fantasy points per game. I think this is a line where, you know, I'm more bullish on his season long output than that. Again, I'm not necessarily a gambler, so I'm not telling you I'm like buying, you know, or betting the over here, but it's just interesting to see that him being 2nd, but also 300 yards less rushing than he did than he had last year. So it's just an interesting, you know, process that goes into these projections.
Yeah, I think this one is one that's pretty obvious. So I'm just going to move on to one I think that's more interesting. And that's Kenneth Walker. This rushing line and touchdown line is interesting to me in the sense that I looked at it and I was like, man, I think Kenneth Walker can do a lot better than that this year, considering what he's done, what he did in 2022 and 2023. He cleared this line, which I should probably tell you the line, which is 875.5 rushing yards, over under 6.5 touchdowns. And I think that this line is telling us that Vegas doesn't necessarily believe in this offense or the offensive line, because the offensive line was horrible last year and they did add Gray Zabel to it. So it should be better in theory, but this on the surface feels quite low for Kenneth Walker, considering the previous 2 seasons he's cleared this line. In 2023, he had 905 rushing yards. And in 2022, he had 1,051 rushing yards, and he only played in 15 games in both of those seasons. All reports that I'm seeing out of training camp have Kenneth Walker being the guy. Clint Kubiak has a history of using primarily one running back, and you could say, well, he's had Alvin Kamara and Ezekiel Elliott in his time as an offensive coordinator, and that is true. But Kenneth Walker is a pretty dynamic running back, and But the thing is, Vegas is telling you to pump the brakes a little bit. And I think Vegas is telling you to sell compared to some of the other running backs that are out there. It's at a similar ADP. So what are your thoughts here? Because I found this one of the more fascinating lines out there.
Yeah, I think in addition to the offense, it's also a projection of health. He's missed 2 games, you know, in his first couple of seasons, and then, you know, only played 11 games last year. He cleared the rushing line in his first 2 seasons in those 15 games, and then was not pacing to last season in his 11 games, was not pacing to hit this line. So we had a bad offense. We had a bad offensive line, really bad offensive system, plus health issues all contributing to this. Now, that offensive system has improved massively. The offense of, you know, the offensive personnel hasn't really, depending on what you believe on, you know, in Cooper Kupp, but surely the offensive line hasn't gotten much better. So that interests me. But then you go back to Kamara. Saints had, you know, not the best offensive line. They weren't a very good team overall. Excuse me. And Kamara still finished with 950 rushing yards and 8 touchdowns, absolutely clearing this line. And that's only in 14 games. So I'm way more bullish on Kenneth Walker than these projections. I do understand where they're coming from. With a guy like Kenneth Walker, from a gambling perspective, it's a lot of risk to put on yourself because there's a lot of fans out there. There's a lot of fantasy people out there that believe in him. And you are as Vegas as the book. You're not confident really that he's going to play a 16 game season. You're not super confident in the offense. So why would you have him for over 900 rushing yards? But this is the difference between Vegas and fantasy. We play for those spike weeks. You know, we don't care if he finishes with 850 rushing yards. If he's playing, you know, the back half of the season and he's hitting those spike weeks, getting that Kamara usage that we think he can get.
Yeah, I would push back a little bit. I mean, we want Tim to get as many rushing yards as possible and receiving yards too. I mean, I think that also factors into his fantasy value because he did see a significant increase in his receiving work last year. And if Clint Kubiak is going to use him as a receiver out of the backfield, the way he's used running backs like that, like Alvin Kamara and Zeke in the past, then it's wheels up for Kenneth Walker, no matter how bad the offensive line is, because you're getting those points, especially in PPR leagues. But let's move on to somebody that you were just being so disrespectful to earlier on, and that's Brian Robinson. His line is 725.5 rushing yards, 6.5 touchdowns. And the reason why I put Brian Robinson up here is because I find this touchdown line fascinating because it's the same as Kenneth Walker. Now, I don't think too many people would argue the fact that Brian Robinson is in a better offense than Kenneth Walker, at least an offense that projects to have a better offensive line with a better quarterback. I think that those are facts that we can agree on. And Brian Robinson, the more I think about this, the more I'm in, the more I'm sold. And I take it that you don't think so. And it has nothing to do with the talent profile of the player. Because if you put Kenneth Walker in the same situation that Brian Robinson is in, we would be shouting from the mountaintops how much we want Kenneth Walker in Dynasty. And his value would be going through the roof because everybody would be catching on. Brian Robinson is a bigger, a little bit slower of a running back. I don't think he's as good as Kenneth Walker, but he, like I said, this situation doesn't get much better. And I think he's going to get a lot of those goal line touches. There's a stat that BDG had in one of his videos. So shout out to him. 50% of all rushing touchdowns came inside the 2 yard line. And I'm sure that the Eagles had something to do with that stat with the tush push, but I digress. I think Brian Robinson projects to be that guy. Now, is he going to catch passes out of the backfield like Kenneth Walker can? Probably not. He's not really going to be a pass catcher. They're going to use Austin Ekeler and maybe Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt in that role more so than they're going to use Brian Robinson. So his ceiling might be capped, but I think he's going to get a lot of touchdowns. And Vegas is telling you, yeah, we're pretty decently bullish on Brian Robinson this season, or at least we expect him to do what he's done in the past, which is to be, you know, a solid RB3, maybe with some RB2 upside, like in 2023 when he finishes the RB2 or at RB22 rather in fantasy points per game. So go ahead, talk a bunch of smack on Brian Robinson. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, if he was like the RB35 or RB36 or something in dynasty value, like I'd be, you know, inclined to agree with you, but he's literally just priced at where he was last year. And you said it, right? The ceiling is capped. So why do I really care about a slow plotter who might get 8 or 9 touchdowns? He has Jaden Daniels, who has already seen a propensity to take off himself with some of those goal line carries. And in certain situations and game scripts, he's going to be off the field. I think Krosky Merritt earns a role here. I think Eckler was really good with opportunities when he was healthy last year. And I just don't think there's anything special about Brian Robinson. I think this is a good line. Vegas is literally saying we know who Brian Robinson is. We think this is fair, but they're also a little bit bearish on his touchdown production this year in terms of 9, 8, and now projecting for about 7 touchdowns here. But he's fine. You know, he's at ADP. And I think this is a player where it's redraft or dynasty. You're sitting there and you have him. And even when he's playing well, you don't really feel it that much. You have to get those touchdowns, and trading him becomes a nightmare because he's overvalued for his ceiling production. And everyone knows what a bad Brian Robinson game looks like. It's like a 5-6 point stinker, and it hurt. It's you're in your RB2 spot. It hurts. And he doesn't have that name brand value. It's tough to trade Brian Robinson. So he's just too overvalued for me.
All right, we have 2 more players to get to. The first one is David Montgomery. And you talk about disrespect, man. Vegas must be thinking that this Lions offense is going to regress, or at least some of the pieces are going to regress. David Montgomery last season finishes the RB18. He was RB16 in fantasy points per game. He finished with 775 rushing yards and 12 total touchdowns, and Vegas is projecting him for 725.5 rushing yards is the line, 8.5 touchdowns. So they are projecting David Montgomery to finish with significantly fewer touchdowns, kind of like Jameson Williams, you know, that they're projecting him to finish with significantly less production than they had last year. My thought was that I feel like this line is probably about right. And Vegas is telling you, David Montgomery is a 28-year-old running back, is probably a sell. You know, this offense probably does take a step back. But what do you think, man?
Yeah, I agree. I think this offense takes a step back. I think Gibbs starts to eat a little bit more of those, early drive touches, which is where David Montgomery is bread and butter has been for the past couple of years. And we're talking about a more talented but similar archetype to Brian Robinson here, and a 28-year-old running back who's probably the 1B in his team, RB24 in dynasty right now. Selling.
Yeah, as much as I like David Montgomery, I think anytime a running back gets to 27 or 28, it's time, and somebody can still say about David Montgomery, oh yeah, that guy's going to produce for my fantasy team at an RB2 level. And Vegas is telling you, it might be RB2 level, but it might be back end RB2, maybe even sinking into the RB3 range. Last player, and I found this fascinating too, Chase Brown. Chase Brown, his line is 875.5 rushing yards and 5.5 touchdowns. And last season, Chase Brown had 990 rushing yards, 11 touchdowns. So again, Vegas is not on my side here. Vegas is telling you, no, Chase Brown is not going to produce at the level that he produced at. Now, again, we don't have receiving work, which he should get a ton of receptions this year, because he was number 6 amongst all running backs in targets with 65, and he had 54 receptions to go with that. But Vegas is telling you, no, we think Chase Brown is probably going to have a slightly less production than he had last year. So what do you think, man? I think very, very clearly that Vegas is saying sell Chase Brown, which I don't know if I agree with.
No, I feel like it has to be an indictment on the Chiefs or the Chiefs, the Bengals offense. It has to be like a step down in the Bengals offense, because I posited some theories about, maybe they're not super bullish on giving Chase Brown all this work next year. And then they immediately squashed that by cutting Zach Moss. And they basically said, no, Matt, we are. We actually are very bullish on giving Chase Brown a large bulk of the opportunities this year. And yet, here's where we have this line. So there has to be a offensive regression baked in here, because we have an offense that from a touchdown perspective, he had 11 last year, and the Bengals throw within the 5-yard line more than a lot of other teams. So you got to think that something changes there, you know, whether they run more and Chase Brown gets offset with some of that variance, or even takes a little bit of a hit and ends up with 7-8 touchdowns because he's the lead back and probably the lead goal line back for an offense we expect to score a lot of points. So if you believe in the Bengals offense at all, you have to be taking this line. It's obviously screaming sell Chase Brown in Dynasty. But again, I think I have said I am on the seller side of Chase Brown, but not to this degree.
Yeah, he had 7 rushing touchdowns, 4 receiving touchdowns last year. So even if we just look at the rushing touchdowns, they're good projecting call. It to be lower than that. So, you know, 1.5 touchdowns lower. So yeah, I was surprised by this one, to be sure, because again, the Bengals are not going to be a team that is good defensively. I don't think with the Trey Hendrickson stuff, I don't think that they've sorted that out yet, at least not as of this recording. And it's not like their defense was good with him last year. So this is again, the Bengals are going to have to throw the ball a lot. And you would think Chase Brown, and that's one of my main points around him being the RB1 in fantasy, is I think he could lead, you know, or be amongst the leaders and amongst running backs and targets, you know, especially obviously in PPR leagues is what I'm talking about here. So again, I think Vegas is telling you to sell. I don't think I'm out on Chase Brown. I think I'm still willing to hold, or, you know, obviously, and I think I'd still be willing to buy him at the right price. So again, I don't think this line's a good one, assuming Chase Brown is mostly healthy throughout the season. I think he can surpass this and surpass it, you know, by a decent stretch, or by a decent amount rather. So there you have it. 13 secrets that Vegas is telling you about the fantasy season based on their lines. We interpreted those. Let us know if our interpretations were not in line with what you thought. Let us know if you agreed with us too. Let us know if you like this. This is the first time we're doing an episode like this. So we might do more. We might take some more lines that Vegas has thrown at us this season and discuss them from a dynasty perspective. So Matt, as we recap, or as we finish up here, do you have any final words of wisdom for the people tonight?
I think the biggest word of wisdom I have is don't listen to anytime I said I would take this line in this episode. Just don't do that. If anything, maybe do the opposite of that. Yeah. Don't take any of my gambling advice for futures on this podcast. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I would say too, all right, so we're going through all these Vegas lines, and Vegas, they're only interested in making money. So they're just, you know, they're setting a line based on what is the most probable outcome. But I would say this, fantasy football is supposed to be fun. And if you have a good reason for wanting to go get one of your guys, and it goes to all fantasy football formats, especially if you're only playing in a few leagues, go get your guys. I'm a big believer in going and getting your guys, you know. In Dynasty, those guys tend to change just based on age and situation and all this stuff. But I wouldn't necessarily let a Vegas line deter you from going out and getting a guy that you really want to get. Now, I think the Vegas lines are a really good thing to look at when you're setting your own rankings, or when you're looking at the landscape as a whole, because we can look at the Vegas line and go, okay, this is where the ADPs don't match up with what Vegas is telling you, which is the exercise that we tried to go through tonight. And we're going to be right in that. We're going to be wrong. But the best thing that we can do in this moment in time is sort of take every piece of information that we have and make the best determination of what we think is going to happen in the future, which is why, you know, fantasy football is so great, because we never know what's going to happen, really. There's all sorts of curveballs that are thrown at us every single year. And I would argue the best fantasy players are not the players that draft the best, and drafting is its whole is a whole segment of fantasy that there's good drafters and bad drafters, but I would argue the best fantasy players and the best dynasty players are the ones that can adjust the quickest and the best, the ones that can take the information and make a trade or go pick up a player and make those adjustments on the fly. And that's what we're here to provide you each and every week, hell, twice a week sometimes, on the Dynasty Roundtable. So go ahead and click that like button, subscribe to the channel, follow us on social media, on Twitter at Seth_DWald, DIEWOLD, at Babich_Matt10, at FF Dynasty Table on Twitter. Matt, any final words before we wrap up the show and tell people to not care about Aaron Rodgers?
No, I've said my piece about Pottery Barn. I think I'll leave it at. I was going to do it as like a recurring bit, but you know, that felt a little too Karen-y.
Maybe it'll come up again at some point. If there's another, you know, we used to have a segment on this baseball podcast I used to do called Seth's Soccer Corner. That was a good one, but I couldn't do it every week because it was just when I got mad about soccer and people being so into soccer. And let us know if you're.
I thought you were going to talk about soccer. I was going to ask if you can tell me who to draft with my fantasy EPL Premier League draft that I'm in.
Messi. Take Messi. If you don't get Messi, it's all over for you. I don't
think he's available.
Oh, well, damn. All right. That's going to do it for us. Nobody cares about Aaron Rodgers. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, be good, everybody. And we will see you later.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.